You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Stand up!
Fight back!
We keep running back!
Stand up! Fight back!
As you may well remember, after the success of the Occupy movement in Wall Street, similar protests launched across New Zealand in 2011.
1 minute, what the police are doing is illegal. Next minute, it isn't. The search and surveillance bill is not good for any New Zealanders. We're on our way to a police state.
That was now Green Party MP Marama Davidson speaking on the 1st of October 2011. The bill she's describing passed the following April, extending surveillance powers granted to the state. Susie Dawson is a Kiwi activist and journalist who worked as a member of Occupy Auckland's media team at that time. Now, 5 years later and following involvement in GCSB and TPPA opposition, she's seeking asylum in Russia, alleging she has been spied on, harassed and threatened by the police. I spoke with Susie and began by asking her why she felt the need to take such measures.
I was already in Russia when I applied for asylum, so I didn't pick Russia as such. It was just that circumstances kind of picked it for me. I had put in Privacy Act requests to the GCSB and to the SIS to ask them up front, hey, am I a target? And I got through those responses from them at the end of September and of last year, 2016. And the nature in particulars of those requests, reading between the lines, made it pretty obvious that yes, I am a target. The GCSB request also tacitly implicated the Office of the Prime Minister, which was really interesting and also really significant. Obviously, John Key, the now-departed Prime Minister, was in fact the Minister in charge of the intelligence agencies. Throughout the period that the GCSB was undertaking illegal spying against New Zealand citizens. So that really combined with other circumstances, political circumstances, through August and September of last year, made it really clear to me that my case was really serious. And I got extensive legal advice throughout the period. And the advice to me was that I was not safe to continue travelling if I am in fact a target. Also in August of last year, The Intercept and TVNZ released the name of the first of the 88 people who was targeted. And he had gone to Australia when he was targeted in New Zealand and had gone to Australia where he was raided and his passport was cancelled. So there was already a precedent for the GCSB target having had their passport cancelled. So given the nature of the legislation that they were trying to pass and the particulars and nature of the responses that came back to me from the spy agencies, the advice to me was that it was too risky for me to travel from that point on because, especially as a solo mother, like of two children, to have my passport cancelled if we were in transit would leave us in a legal grey zone. We would have no idea what would happen to us. If you're in transit, you can't apply for asylum because you're not physically in a country. So I needed to apply for asylum where I was at the time that I received that information.
And what exactly led you to Russia in the first place? I mean, you've talked about being surveilled and harassed by the police while in New Zealand and involved in some of these activities. Is that kind of what drove you to Russia?
In New Zealand, there was a slow escalation. I think initially in the occupation, we were more concerned about interference from undercover police. When the break-ins in my house started and then when we were being followed everywhere and photographed, I think there was multiple agencies, including private contractors involved. So it was private investigators. We know that Auckland Council had hired TCIL, Thompson Clark Investigations Limited, to target occupiers. They are a notorious private investigation agency that have been involved in really dodgy dealings in New Zealand against activists, like infiltrating activist groups, even getting caught sleeping with activists under false identities, assumed identities, GPS tracking, activist cars, and all kinds of things. But then as I started to work on exposing the role of the FBI and their incursions into New Zealand surrounding the Kim.com raid, and then my work on working against or the GCSB to expose their illegal stuff with New Zealand citizens, and then moving on and my support of Snowden throughout 2013 and Moment of Truth event and leading up into the election, that's when it really escalated and it was abundantly clear that it was no longer just undercover cops or private investigators, but it was actually international intelligence agencies operating in New Zealand as well as the New Zealand intelligence agencies. So that escalation led from 2011 to 2014 to where the dangers to me became very physical, and they were absolutely trying to harm me in many ways, but very, very serious ways. And after National won the 2014 election, I was receiving constant threats, and I was overtly being told, leave the country or you're dead. Like, it's that simple. So I did what many activists did around the world, who, especially in the English-speaking countries, who experienced similar types of things. And I headed across the world to Berlin in Germany. And I had hoped that leaving New Zealand, that the terrifying things that were happening to me would kind of stay in New Zealand. But unfortunately, it continued. The surveillance and the harassment and the endangerment of me and my family followed me across the world. And that was when I started to realize that these agencies are operating not just in your home country, not even just in the English-speaking countries, but actually in all of the NATO countries. So basically continued to move across a period of time until we got out of the NATO countries, and that was when all of a sudden it stopped. We were no longer being physically harassed and interfered with and surveilled and pressured and endangered. And so we traveled around a few different countries, and we happened to be in Russia at the time that I received back the answers from the agencies and realized exactly how serious my situation was, that up to and including implication, you know, of the Prime Minister. Like, once you discover that your name has been across the Prime Minister's desk and that counter-terrorism resources have been used against you in retaliation for protected democratic practice, you know, journalism and activism is the keystones of democracy. We have the right to dissent. We have the right to seek redress. We have the right to freedom of expression and freedom of association. And all of that had been denied to me. So it was kind of a natural progression. It was never planned from the outset.
These are obviously like really serious allegations. I mean, do you think that New Zealanders, I guess, have their heads in the sand when it comes to surveillance? I mean, how, or is it just kind of something that's exclusive to activism?
I think that I think Snowden and other whistleblowers, have given us the blueprints. Like, they've given us the theory. They've showed us literally the PowerPoint presentations of what these guys do. But myself and other activists and journalists who have experienced this, of which there are many, we are the practical reality of it. Like I say in my documentary, I was literally a housewife from the suburbs. I'm like a white chick from the suburbs who becomes an activist. I should not have counterterrorism resources being used against me. I should not be interfered with through the financing of terrorism and money laundering legislation, but that's exactly what was happening. You know, I'm not a money launderer and I'm not a terrorist, but the legislation passed under those premises was used against me and against other activists and other journalists. I think there's definitely some awareness in New Zealand society because the GCSB movement was bipartisan. I covered all of those events extensively and was very involved in that movement. there we had every political party except National Enact. You know, we had New Zealand First, but everybody right across the board participating in the first town hall meeting, for example. It was a broad-based movement. We had the approval of the majority of the country. We had 20 different cities, you know, protesting simultaneously. So people understand that this has been going on, but they haven't really had the practical examples of real targets and what really happens to the people who are targeted by these agencies. We've just had the theory, the knowledge that it is happening, but it's kind of been like this ethereal out there thing. Whereas I think this has really brought home the reality when people hear my story and see the documentary and look into my work, then they realize, wow, you know, these agencies really have been persecuting journalists and activists. I'm really fortunate. I'm extremely fortunate because people knew this was happening to me while it was happening. So it's really not just my word to be taken for it. Since I've spoken up about, especially, I mean, I've talked openly about this for years, but especially in the last few months as it's become more public, there's been a whole series of activists that knew me and worked with me and other people come forward and say, yes, this was happening to her. Yes, to a certain degree, it was happening to us as well. There are many people who've had similar experiences.
And just finally, do you have reason to believe that this conversation is being listened in on by intelligence services?
It's beyond any shadow of a doubt that it is, to be honest with you. I mean, the algorithms all based around keywords, so we're sitting here saying words like intelligence agency and surveillance, and the algorithms will pick that up and they will mark the conversations, and if we are really special, they will be listening live along with us, and if not, they'll be reviewing it after the fact. The degree to which it's now automated is up for debate. Snowden told us what was happening, you know, up until 2013, but even he doesn't know what's happening in 2017. Nobody really does know that. But absolutely, there'd be an extreme level of interest in this. I mean, I'm the first New Zealand journalist that anyone knows of who has applied for asylum in Russia, but even if we were just two random people having this conversation, there is a very high likelihood that they would be very interested in the contents of it.
Can anyone explain why the modern-day whales are so big?
The Wire.
You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. That was my producer, Mac, speaking to New Zealand journalist Susie Dawson, who is currently seeking asylum in Russia. Now, I don't know if it was just me, Mac, but did I hear a weird beep in that interview?
An oddly timed beep,
I think. Just after you asked if the conversation was being recorded, there was a very eerie, sort of cold beep.
Yeah, almost a Cold War beep, perhaps. You know, that like submarine kind of.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. And I mean, if you missed that just then, we'll podcast this interview later and you can check it out on 95bfm.com. But did you ask Susie about that beep? Because you noticed it when you were editing, right?
I did, yeah. I didn't realise how perfect the timing was until kind of going through that interview. But I contacted Susie and I asked her whether she had heard that too. And what she told me was, and I quote, "If you listen to my last radio interview on Voices Network, they complain about the same thing. Same with my non-UK radio interviews. If you listen to Kim.com's court live stream footage, same thing. Julian Assange at Moment of Truth, many of his interviews actually, same thing. Yes, they interfere with audio and with video and with website software and hardware." End quote.
That's pretty crazy.
It is.
I mean, but also part of me thinks, surely they'd be advanced enough to not be leaving tracks like that. Or is that like a warning, stop it?
That's what I was thinking, you know. I've read some of Susie's other interviews, and she spoke about this kind of overt surveillance where they would let you know.
Yeah,
they
right.
Were
so it's purposeful.
They're
not hiding it. Wow. Scary stuff.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.